Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. We are so happy to welcome, it's kind of like helping, Jane St. Anthony back to our airwaves this morning, and she is the author of The Summer Sherman Loved Me, Grace Above All, and Isabel Day Refuses to Die of a Broken Heart. That book was a finalist for the Minnesota Book Award and the Midwest Booksellers Choice Award for Young Adult and Middle Grade. And Jane Anthony has brought us the fourth book in this series to teach us a little bit. This group of high school friends, and it's in the 60s, growing up in Minnesota. They don't necessarily face the kinds of storybook problems of, you know, books perhaps of that era where, you know, maybe a hole in your new dress was the worst problem you faced. These folks face some really kind of adult situations, and yet there still is that charm of yesteryear about the books. Jane, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's great to talk with you again.
I'm glad to speak with you again.
How do you know as an author when there needs to be another book? You wrote the first book. I mean, some authors I know plan out the idea that this is going to be a series of multiple books, and they kind of have a plan for the overarching series. And some authors get to the end of a book, and suddenly there's maybe another book and maybe another. How does an author know this?
Well, I can't speak for all authors, but I can speak for myself when I say that I'm not a planner. I wrote the first book. I wrote Sherman as a standalone. And then I thought, well, I wonder what I'll write next. And I tried to figure out what her friend Grace's mother was up to, why she seemed to be rather delinquent as a mother. Then I had an idea for the third one. There was a suicide committed in the neighborhood I grew up in. It was never talked about. I never understood it, and it haunted me. So a new girl came in who was in that situation. Her father had died that way. And where did this one come from? I'm trying to remember where whatever normal came from. It just kind of came out of them being in hospital. What did I say? In hospital, in high school. It started with an H. Okay, school?
I've done this. I just did the same thing. So obviously there's some sort of a word virus going around.
It's in our phones. We should have them checked soon.
I'll call ITSS as soon as we get off the air.
Okay. And the next one, I put them in high. They are in high school, and I wanted them to have a serious boyfriend experience. So Margaret, there's a boyfriend for Margaret. His name is Teddy, and Teddy started out to be someone he didn't turn out to be, and it surprised me. But I think that I know that there are people who outline their stories, who understand their stories. I never know what's happening until I start writing. And sometimes, Lisa, I think, how did I get to be that way? And I think a lot of people are that way who write. I think I spent my whole life daydreaming, so I was really preparing and I never realized it. But this is what happened.
I just love asking writers about the process.
Sure.
And I love the idea that the author doesn't have a clue what's coming up next, and when their characters surprise them, and I think, how can that be? And I mean, that kind of thought process is just very enjoyable, to try to imagine, how could that be that an author doesn't know what a character is going to be or how they're turning out? And yet, I can definitely see how the creative spark, sometimes it seems like it's steering you down one path or another, and suddenly you end up someplace which is where you had not originally intended.
Right. And it's kind of fascinating to me. It's as though I'm kind of writing and or thinking behind my back. I don't see what's there until I start writing. And I do have a tremendous amount of respect for people who can actually outline a book. They know what the chapters will be. I think that sounds like a wonderful process, but we all have a different process. So there.
And I think, obviously, you know, J.K. Rowling had written out the entire arc of the Harry Potter series. And I think with the way that was constructed, or perhaps the way it turned out is because it was constructed that way, to keep track of characters and to keep track of story arcs and to keep track of that kind of thing. And that's a fascinating idea, too, to have an author look at a book project writ large and say, all right, this is going to be a 7 or 8 book series, and, and this is how it's going to go.
I respect that so much. And mine, my books are, if you pick my book up, it is not as heavy as a J.K. Rowling book. So there you go. It's just, what can I say? I'm fascinated by that process. I remember this, I might have said this when we spoke a long time, well, a few years ago, but when I was camping up north and had the opportunity to go see the Sinclair Lewis Museum, and what I saw were pages and pages and pages of notes and outlines, and I thought I could never be a writer. I didn't think I'd have the patience to do that.
And again, not only do there need to be a billion different writers, they need a billion different points of view, a billion different voices, a billion different processes. Mm-hmm. And as a reader, there need to be books like Shelby Foote's Civil War series. There need to be books like J.K. Rowling. But there also need to be books that you can read in the tub and that don't give you carpal tunnel. Okay? There need to be, when you are camping and sitting in your comfy camping chair, or when you're on the couch, you can prop a book on a pillow. That's a wonderful thing. But you do need lighter reading, physically lighter reading, so that you can read in the tub.
Right. I still bring books when I travel, so I have to think about the weight.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Books that you can travel with. These are also important. And whatever idiot says, don't bring books, obviously just doesn't get the point of travel.
No, that would be like not bringing my shoes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole point
the physical
of
a
vacation is reading in a different place.
Right. That's well said.
That's what a vacation. Camping is reading in the woods.
Yeah, it is.
Fishing
is
reading in a boat. So,
I still remember camping in Michigan and reading Crime and Punishment, and I didn't want to come out of the tent.
Oh, I can imagine.
I wasn't, you know, I had a car. I could put the book in the car. I didn't have to carry it the whole trip.
But there you go.
But but I still remember that was just something I'll never forget. And it is so much fun to identify what you read with where you were when you read it. That's, I think, that's what makes a strong statement about a book.
Stephen King's It by the Fire in October Camping. Been there, done that. And that's another book you can't read in the tub because it's just too darn heavy.
Right.
I love the idea. I would imagine that by the time kids get into high school, you've got so much to work with, just in the sense that I read this little description about the book, and it says, after 3 years of high school, Margaret still isn't any closer to what she wants, to sing and dance on Broadway, to be a model like Twiggy, to be madly in love with someone other than Paul McCartney. It's not much to ask, but with her friends Grace and Isabel, she's willing to adjust her goals for the summer to a job, a car, and a boyfriend. Teenagers have such amazingly complex and rich lives where things are ludicrous, they are really ludicrous. Where things are serious, they are really serious. This intersection of childhood and adulthood, this transition period, must be so rich for you as a writer to explore.
It is. It is, because obviously I was a victim of it. So it's just, the highs and lows, I should never say I don't think this, but it's for a lot of people, it's just so hard. I mean, you're told what you must do. You must go to school and you must come home. Everything else has to be negotiated. So it is just such a time of, I should talk about my books and not me, but I remember sitting at dinner with my family and crying. You know, for all sorts of reasons that have been identified, it is a very difficult time. You don't have the autonomy that you will, even when you go off to college or anywhere. And you're just, you seem to be an adult, at least when a 3-year-old looks at you. It's a very confusing time for many people. Yeah. So.
And you certainly feel very wise, and you feel very wise right up until the point you make a bonehead move and realize, ooh, Yes, I didn't understand all of that.
Right. And who was it who said that their, was it Mark Twain? I can't remember who said his father became wiser every year. You know,
it sounds like, exactly.
Yeah, you start out at the low point, like they don't know anything.
Right.
And then you realize as an adult, well, they knew more than I do now. So it's all fascinating. But it's a rich time to mine. And I remember high school is is still very vivid. It's not all positive, but I always think, will I ever be in a situation confined with that many people and observing that many people and acting with that many people ever again? I don't think I have.
And it's so much fun. I'm looking forward to when the girls start going to their high school reunions, because it is so much fun to see the teenager hiding behind the face of the old person.
Lisa, you're giving me all sorts of ideas. Yeah. A high school reunion, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah.
I jumped right into college with them, and now I see there's something in between.
I'm looking the big 40th reunion in the face this summer, and I can still see, you know, social media. I can still see the teenager, you know, under, and it's like, well, when did they get gray hair? How'd that happen?
Right. But,
Jane, it's always a delight to talk with you, and your books, again, are such a fascinating exploration of a time that many of us remember. Instead of being painted in the candy-coated colors of the books that we read at that time, pretty much people didn't have very serious problems, this is kind of a more of a realistic look back for us, and perhaps for young people to read the books now, even if the time, the 60s, doesn't resonate with them, some of the experiences and the feelings certainly will.
And I certainly read books about times that I didn't live through. I would have died without Betsy Casey and Tibb. You know, I still reread those for inspiration, Margaret Maud Hart Lovelace. And let's see, what else can I say? Oh, Lisa, I'm going to give a shout out. I'm doing a reading at the Red Balloon Bookshop on March 30th at 2 p.m., and I'd also like to comment on something you just said about the perspective of looking back. This has been pointed out to me a couple times, that people who are, what shall we say, not especially young, have appreciated looking back at that time. I've done some book clubs with people who are closer to my age, and they have been as enthusiastic as kids. So I think I hope it's fun to look at for people who are younger, and I think there's something in it that reminds us of ourselves then too.
Jane, you're a delight to talk with, as always. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'm looking forward to the high school reunion book somewhere down the line.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks. I'll have to dedicate it to you if we get there.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay. Goodbye. Have a great one. Bye.
Jane St. Anthony this morning, our guest here on Minnesota Reads. Her book is called Whatever Normal Is, and it's the fourth book in a series about this group of friends. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.